following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
From the radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, with me, with you. Yeah. I'm always with me.
Well, one of those things.
With me in the studio, I have Charlie Saladino sitting across from me.
How's everybody?
Hassan Godwin is on assignment this week.
Assignment.
And Hermes Schnurship. We stopped making up excuses why he's not here.
No, I'm figuring the alien vortex got him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was bitten by the alien's dog.
Yes.
So he now has this fondness for polyester and silk. I don't know. It's one of the chain reactions you get.
So we'll find out what happens.
I don't know where he is.
If he ever shows up, we'll find out what
happens. Yes, I don't know.
So if you're having any trouble listening on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com. Listen to us on live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can actually see us on the live studio webcam, which takes 10-second picture intervals. We're waiting right now on it. And on our site, itcamefromradio.com, we have the live chatting. I always forget to mention that you can chat with your fellow listeners on the show right now. So you can actually talk to all the listeners. You can't talk to us, though, unless you give us a call. And our phone number is area code 631-888-8811. And now I'm going to take it away with the news. By the way, all the news that I mentioned on the show is always on our Facebook page. So if you ever have a comment on our items, you can just go on our Facebook page, make your comments, and I'll read it on the air as well.
Please go on our Facebook page. It's a nice page.
Yeah.
We would love to hear from you.
It has pictures. It has our archives are on it and everything. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's actually kind of nifty.
And I have my album photos.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. We had pictures on it.
Book signings.
Yeah.
That nobody believes I go to.
Which is really awesome if you take a look at it. So let's see. Last Wednesday, CBS has decided to renew The Big Bang Theory for 3 more seasons. Executives say it doesn't take a theoretical physicist to see why the show is a big part of our comedy future. From ratings to critical acclaim to pop culture buzz, it struck a chord on all levels. The creative genius of Chuck Lorre and the on-camera talents of an amazing young ensemble created a comedy that will entertain viewers for a long time. Now, this reminds me... when they renewed Married with Children, it had a 3-year renewal. And after 3 years, they canceled it. So maybe after 3 years of this show, that's enough. And that's it.
It reached all the boundaries it could possibly reach, I think, without going overboard, which I love the show.
I could not care for it.
You didn't like the show.
I did not care for it.
I liked that there was a lot of funny moments in the show. It's just, I think it's like, it was actually, I think, the prequel to The Family Guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, that's
just my opinion, folks. I don't know. But it was just, it just reminded me, like the Flintstones with the Honeymooners.
Right, right.
This reminded me of The Family Guy.
Well, I guess a good congratulations.
But a lot cleaner.
Yeah. Well, it is it was the 8 o'clock show, so it's the family hour.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, let's see. Moving right along. If you guys remember, we did a news story about the Superman story, that they're having a new 12-issue arc about him walking across from the United States of America, getting the feeling.
Oh, my God. How can we forget that story?
You remember that. Well, it turns out that the writer of that story has decided to quit midway. So after 6 issues, he's done. He's leaving it to focus on self-contained graphic novels. So now I don't know how this story is going to end or how it was originally intended to end, but good luck with that.
He stops at a butcher's house. And then he finds little Orphan Annie in the back room.
With Brenda Starr,
yeah. And then the screen just goes black.
That's how it ends?
That's how it ends.
Well, doesn't he at least fly off or something?
No, screen goes black.
Okay.
That's the new ending to everything.
Speaking of comic books,
Mr. Segway, speaking of comic books.
IDW Publishing is proud to announce Infestation, starting this month, January 2011, with zombie and zombie robots are infesting the worlds of their properties, four of the properties, which would be Transformers, Star Trek, G.I. Joe, and Ghostbusters. So what's going to happen, there's going to be zombie and zombie robots in all four titles, and all the four titles are now going to be contained in one universe. So Ghostbusters are going to be interacting with G.I. Joe, which is going to be interacting with Star Trek, which is going to be interacting with Transformers.
That should be interesting. A lot of interacting there.
Yeah, I just don't see how that's going to make any kind of sense at all.
No. It won't.
Especially zombie robots.
What exactly is a zombie robot? You have to be alive before you can be a zombie.
Well, the Transformers are alive. They're, you know, sentient robots, so I guess you can have zombie robots.
Zombie robots were robots that were existing and then were like unplugged and then they came back to life. I don't know. You're absolutely right. You have to be dead or alive to be a zombie.
The robot would simply start off where he left off.
Yeah. Well, they had in the Transformers, the second movie, they had Robot Heaven, so why can't they have robot zombies?
If you believe in forever.
But, you know, Ghostbusters fighting Transformers, can you imagine that the logistics of that? And then Spock shows up, it's like...
Oh, yeah, no.
Far beyond
the only way I could watch something like that is totally high. This way everything makes sense. Because if you're totally straight, that's not going to... I'm not advocating getting high, kids. making a point.
Executives say, we found a way to involve all these diverse titles in a massive storyline that ties all the way back to the early days of our company. I think fans will be amazed what we pulled together, as well as the stories that will come out of this in once-in-a-lifetime event. So, I guess good luck with that.
Great. I'm not going to be watching it, but good luck with that.
It's a six-issue limited series on comics, so...
I wish I had a penny for every time I heard something announced as a once-in-a-lifetime event. I'd be richer than Bill Gates.
We have mentioned the once-in-a-lifetime event many times on this show. What was it? The Archie thing?
Yeah.
The Lone Ranger and Zorro crossover?
Yeah. There's been once-in-a-lifetime with everything. I don't know.
Speaking of more comic news.
Mr. Segway, more top news.
According to Comic Mix, they were actually a guest on our show a couple of years ago, Diamond Distributors, which is the major distributor of most comic book companies except for Marvel and DC, has suspended further book shipments to Borders stores because Borders suspended payments to their suppliers earlier this week. So they're not going to be any more comics at Borders bookstores for the foreseeable future, and that actually might hurt the business more. And as a stand, we've already mentioned... a couple weeks back, that Diamond distributor closing down a warehouse.
Right.
So it's bad business for both companies now.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, a lot of bookstores, including the major ones, are finding it hard to keep going with Kindles and so forth.
Yeah.
To shut off a potential source of income just seems stupid to me. I assume that all came down to some sort of a business disagreement about payments, but sounds a lot like it's devolved into cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah, that's actually, I remember way back when I used to work at Blockbuster, that something like that, very similar happened. What they used to do is they took the new releases and then they put them on the, they break it down to like one or two titles, and then they put it on the inside shelves, if you guys remember how Blockbuster was set up, the new release wall and all the movies on the inside for the separated in all the different categories. And then what they used to do is that they used to sell them after a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
They sell the tapes. And eventually they got to a point where they started selling out so much stuff that they didn't have any old movies left. So it actually hurt their own business because they got rid of stuff that they should have kept.
Yeah.
So it's along the same lines, is that they're getting rid of things that they're not able to take in anymore. So who knows what's going to happen to the comic book industry now. And as it stands, it's already it's 3 month turnover. You start now, your book comes out 3 months later. And as of today's digital age, everybody wants stuff now.
I find that when we hit these situations, or when the world hits situations like this, things die out, and then all of a sudden something comes in to rekindle it, and then it's like beating a dead horse again.
Sort of like professional wrestling, which goes through cycles.
Yeah, definitely.
But at least now with professional wrestling, they actually say storylines, you know, it's scripted.
Yeah. Vince McMahon actually, a while back, admitted it's entertainment.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's entertainment.
Yeah. Well, so, my late father could remember back in the day when they wanted professional wrestlers to join Actors Equity.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bruno Sammartino, remember him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is even before that.
That's before that, right?
Yeah. Fast question. Who was the first personality wrestler as opposed to just being a guy in tights?
Wasn't it something like Gorgeous George?
It was Gorgeous George.
Yeah. Where did I pull that out of?
Yeah, wow. Which became a franchise. And my mother actually saw the original Gorgeous George way back in the 1930s.
Yeah. See, I told you he's connected to everybody. Every single time. He's like, what was it, the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon?
Six degrees of Tomra.
Yeah. speaking of making stuff entertainment.
Mr. Segway, making stuff entertainment.
Merv Griffin Entertainment has announced plans to adapt Pac-Man, the video game, as a reality series. The executives say...
No. No.
This idea is...
No.
This idea should be buried at the crossroad with a stake through its heart. Should,
like the guy who thought of it should be like just put away.
They say...
He's not safe on this planet. Put him away.
The idea we have is to take what Pac-Man is and bring it to life. Which is essentially the world's biggest game of tag to television. The idea is being shopped around to broadcast networks as we speak.
Oh, could you imagine that shopping?
September.
It's like, hello? Yeah, I got this great idea, Pat. That's a door shutting in their faces.
Yeah, you know, if you go online and you know Google YouTube, if you go to YouTube and Google the Pac-Man, they actually have... The Japanese have people in giant Pac-Man outfits running around on a giant Pac-Man board. It's the craziest thing. So maybe that's where they got the idea from. Who knows what they're going to do with that?
I do not want to say anything against our Japanese friends.
Or Pac-Man?
No, screw that, Pat. I mean, just nothing against our Japanese. If we didn't have them, we would have nobody running away from Godzilla. There we go.
And also, in more Pac-Man news...
Mr. Segway, more Pac-Man news. That's disgusting.
It was announced that the company that owns Pac-Man, Namco Bandai, working on a television program featuring its most popular character that would air on 3D. The show is pictured as a reboot featuring a teenage Pac-Man who is thrust into greatness and must save the Pac world when it is overrun by ghosts. And he does eat the ghosts in the 3D cartoon. They dissolve into a mucus-like goo when they're devoured.
Yeah.
And he's aided by his mentor teacher and a group of Pac-Man friends and the four original ghosts, Inky, Blinky, Pinky, Inky, Blinky, and Clyde. So they're going to be the good guys. And it was him and the Pac-Man going against the other ghosts. Since he's not an adult, Pac-Man will suffer the usual angst of teenagers, including being forced to deal with his split affections for friends and fellow students, as well as one of the ghosts.
Listen, I just have one thing to say. Anybody who's excited by this news, please call me up right now, and I will introduce you to girls or guys, whoever's sex called. Really, serious. If anybody is interested... Call out. I want to hear why. I want to hear why. It's like I want to hear why Snooki is famous. You know, why?
He's
you know?
A teenage Pac-Man dealing with teenage issues, falling in love with a ghost. Who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah, thank you. That just said it all to me.
Who doesn't want to see that?
Oh, my God. So I apologize, folks, for this Pac-Man news. We will never have any more Pac-Man. Mark, don't you ever have any more Pac-Man news on this show.
Ross's second law. Humanity is not noted for its sanity.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah. There's always one in the bunch, right?
I think it'll be a beautiful train wreck to watch. The first
oh, my God. Well, it's not going to be any, you know, Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus. I can tell you that. But, oh, my God. I am sorry, folks. Yeah. I seriously apologize for the Pac-Man news. just to make
could
everybody
be worse,
feel at home.
Could be Smurfs.
speaking of video games.
Speaking of video games, don't say anything about Pac-Man.
Universal Studios has attained the film rights to the Asteroids video game, and they're going to make a movie based on the Asteroids video game with writer Matthew Lopez, who wrote The Sorcerer's Apprentice and Bedtime Stories, and Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, who produced the G.I. Joe Transformers, and Doob.
There's a name for you.
Actually, weirdly enough, that one might work, provided they were smart enough to keep the actual blasting of asteroids as just an aspect in the background. You could have this crew of an asteroid blasting ship and just concentrate on their interreactions with each other while they're going about this dangerous job.
Yeah, and I guess if they look at the sky, the asteroids are coming down like in lines, like...
No, that's Space Invaders.
Yeah, Space Invaders. No, oh, Asteroid right. was
Asteroid.
One.
Asteroid's I'm a little,
sorry.
A little triangle ship.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's right. Okay. Right.
And,
yeah,
and you can set it to be zero gravity and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was just thrown by the Pac-Man thing. I was just...
You're still thinking about the Pac-Man. You're
yeah, I'm
about
thinking
Pac-Man
about...
Pac-Man falling in love
a friend
with
the ghost. My friend Charlene has the Pac-Man game in
yes,
her house.
Yes, yes,
and it has what's the...
Miss Pac-Man?
Space Man Invaders.
Oh, Space Invaders.
Right? Yeah, it's the two things. Pac-Man and Space Invaders.
Yeah. For what it's worth, I always thought Ms. Pac-Man was the better of the two Pac-Man games.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, I would agree. Well, it was the next the
but,
next
you know,
evolution.
That's, that'll be the next reality series.
They're going to dress
growing
up.
Growing up Ms. Pac-Man.
So what are they going to do next? A movie based on Pong?
Yeah.
Well, we know there's going to be a battleship movie that's based on a video game.
Yeah.
We know that's coming out, so, you know, I guess...
Let's get away from the games. I'm hating the games. I'm hating.
Let me see. What other bit of news do I have? Oh, The Green Hornet was number one at the box office this weekend, making $34 million. The opening was actually within expectations this time. They weren't surprised or disappointed with the...
oh, my God.
With the amount of money it made.
That is a first on this show.
Yeah.
And they were. Yeah. They said that it ranks as the third best opening for a movie in January.
Hmm.
So, you know, over
God bless each and every one of them.
If it keeps up, then I guess it will be a sequel.
Yeah. I'm hoping.
No, unless it suddenly crashes in the next couple of weeks, which has happened. Yeah. You know, I've heard of movies having great openings, and all of a sudden, once the word of mouth gets going... straight down the drain.
We reported on something a couple weeks ago that the movies had a great showing on Friday, and then word of mouth with the tweeting and the Facebook, it just took a nosedive the following two days.
Like, for instance, back in the day, The Exorcist was pretty scary, and then after word of mouth, you know, it was like, oh, look at that, you know, bed's jumping up and down, ha ha ha. Everybody was
look
expecting.
Look at the pea soup.
Yeah, exactly.
To this day, when it wrote on the stomach, that still freaks me out. That's scary
stuff.
Yeah,
it was. Believe me, if you walked into that not knowing what it was a scary movie.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody says.
All right,
get away from the games.
Yes, now we have sad news. I know you have your bit of news that you wanted to say. Mm-hmm. But legendary comic artist Tom Ziuko, Z-I-U-K-O, Ziuko? I'm going to say Ziuko, who has worked on many comics ranging from Superman to Flintstones to Hellblaze and everything in between, is suffering from kidney failure and is in his fifth week of hospitalization. There are treatments that might save his life. However, but because he's a comic book artist, they don't have health insurance. So the guys at Comic Mix have set up a PayPal to send financial support or moral support. And if you want to contact him directly, you can go to Atomica, A-T-O-M, ICA999@AOL.com. That's him. He's able to receive emails in the hospital. So if you want to send financial support or moral support, you can go that. For more information, I actually have a direct line on, you know, who to actually send money to if you guys don't want to call them directly. I have an address here, so you can contact me at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. So hopefully this guy will be able to survive terrible thing for, you know, freelance artists. It's very sad that the older guys don't get any type of medical insurance at all.
No.
Yeah. They bring a lot of joy to people and treat it like dirt.
Yeah,
like
that's, you know, they're just one of the cogs.
Yeah.
The great, you know, working in the thing. It's very sad.
Well,
so you also had some sad
news.
Yeah,
some very sad news. Longtime actress Susanna York passed away this week from cancer. And she was in a lot of great movies, and but what our friends will probably remember her as is playing opposite Marlon Brando as Superman's mom and the Christopher Reeve version of Superman. So, you know, that was sad news. She's
very
been around
sad
for a while.
She's a very beautiful woman and with a very very great career.
You yeah. mentioned that she was in a couple of things. Do you
she was in A Man for All Seasons. She was in The Battle of Britain, where she played a waif. That was the woman's auxiliary of the Royal Air Force. Lord. And a number of others which are unfortunately... Unfortunately, I'm having a senior moment on, yeah. But those are the two I remember, yeah. Battle of Britain and Man for All Seasons.
Do you know how old she was?
And I'm thinking 72. I don't know why that is sticking in my mind.
Yeah, not that old, really, by today's standards.
Not at all. But her son said she was an amazing woman and an even more amazing mom.
So our condolences go out to the family.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
And I guess we're ready for our break.
Okay.
We'll be right back with Came From the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back with Game Fan Radio. Oh my God.
Oh, we have
that,
so much
that conversation
fun, yeah.
Should not have been, we'll never be broadcast on the radio,
yes,
but it was
yes.
a good one. It was
yes.
a good, it was a good
I
ending.
Could just hear him. What did you say? Tell me.
Yeah, that was the theme, incidentally, to Back,
Back
to
the future.
Future.
Yes,
right.
By Alan Silvestri, I believe was the composer, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. By the way, I do have a few more, I don't have the complete one, but a few other films that Susanna York was in. Her first one was a movie called Tunes of Glory, and probably the one that really kick-started her career was Tom Jones.
Right.
Oh, okay.
With
right.
Albert Finney, right?
Yeah,
Albert
yeah,
Finney.
She was in John Huston's Freud. Her probably her most controversial one was The Killing of Sister George.
Where she played a lesbian.
Right, and was involved in scenes with masturbation. She was in Robert Altman's Images, and she co-authored the script for the 1980 film Falling in Love Again.
Oh, there you go. The wonders of the Internet. Thank you, Internet.
Yes,
computers.
Definitely.
So
anyway, here
yes,
we are, the big show.
Yes,
the big,
this week, the non-snow week, the non-snow edition, we're going to be talking about the number one movie this week, which is Green Hornet. I guess let me preface my the opinion of the movie by saying the only exposure I ever had to Green Hornet was when he appeared on the Batman show, so I really know absolutely nothing about the character at all. So I'm pretty much going in there blind. Except, you know, everybody knows that Bruce Lee was in it. But I never even saw the Bruce Lee story, so I never even saw any behind the scenes. I didn't see anything about it at all. So let's put that out right there. And, since this is, what, the second, third week in January, I've only seen two movies.
Okay.
So it'd be Black Swan and this, and the Green Hornet. So I'm gonna say, Roth, that I think this is the worst movie of the year, seeing as how I've only seen two movies.
Okay, so far you've seen two.
And this is the worst one. Yes, this is the worst okay. movie of the year so far.
Okay, and why did you think it was the worst movie?
Well, since it only
without giving too
competition,
much away,
it had competition against the other movie I saw, which was Black Swan. I actually like Black Swan.
All right, well.
But on its own, it was a decent movie. I felt the best explanation I can give it is that in baseball terms, they kept on trying to hit for home runs every single moment of the movie, every single aspect, everything was either all or nothing type part of the movie, and I felt that more than 50% of the time, they missed. So they were either, you know, gonna go for the home run or just completely just swing and a miss, and I think they swung and missed more often than not.
Well, I understand that based on the previews, people who are into SF fantasy and comics tended not to like it, whereas the general public tended to like it. The guy who produced the film snidely called the SF and comic crowd a bunch of fascists.
Well, you know what?
Well, let's see. Did you like it? Let's start with that.
I haven't seen it like literally a half hour before the show. And my rating thing, you know, my rating chart, I would give it a 7 out of 10.
Okay.
And, I was bordering on giving it a 6, but, it had to, you know, the action was amazing.
Yes.
The cars were amazing.
Yes.
The amazing fighting scenes with Jay Chou, unbelievable. And it was amusing and witty, and that's one of the reasons I disliked it too. So it was a double-edged sword, because I grew up with the Green Hornet.
Okay.
All right, not personally, he didn't live with me, but I mean, I
hanged out in the basement.
You know, he was all right. Cato was a bunch to keep in the house. No, but you know,
well,
it was Seth Rogen was a co-writer.
Yes, and co-writer and co-producer. It was his movie. Basically.
It was his movie, so of course, it was. I don't even want to say more tongue in cheek. It was funny. A lot of witty lines going back and forth. So it's not the Green Hornet that we grew up with. I mean, the only thing that he kept true to the story was the father, the paper,
okay,
and Cato.
All right.
And
did you feel that Seth Rogen helped or hurt the movie as the actor himself?
I kind of felt that it was a better done Kick-Ass, you know, like not because right. It was the same theory. I mean,
it's kind of a realistic,
right? It wasn't that realistic.
Well, until the end.
They could have, they could have made it more realistic, more the way he morphs into the character.
Right.
They could have made it more serious, more realistic, but they just didn't. And you know, I mean, if your kids, you're going out to see it, you're going to love it because it's a lot of action, a lot of fighting. Jay Chow is amazing. And I don't know, does he do?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he's pretty witty, too. The both of them, a good combination, the two of them.
Yes.
And do I think Seth Rogen hurt it?
Or helped it.
Or helped it? Well, if you're going to compare it to the Green Hornet of back then, yeah, totally different character. He didn't stay true to the character. But if you're going to, you know, if you're going to compare it with kids who haven't seen or heard about, they're going to like it. They're going to like him. He's what's going on now. And he's his normal Seth Rogen.
Right.
You know, he doesn't, you know, stray very much from his,
Well, we did a show about star power, and in my opinion, I think that he actually hurt the film because I kept on seeing Seth Rogen. I couldn't get into the character.
Yeah, because you're right, because he plays Seth. Every Seth Rogen film you see is this. You know, it's the same character.
So I think it actually hurt watching the films. Like, that's Seth Rogen trying to be, you know, a superhero. It just didn't fit right with me, and that's one of the things that I think that they tried too hard with. You know, he didn't. It's his movie. He didn't have to put himself in it.
Right.
It would have been better off for No Name.
And
that's the case.
We were talking about this last week. I think off the air, Tom and I were talking about this or something. That the reason a lot of people didn't like the Green Hornet series, and I know for a fact a lot of my friends didn't like it, was because it came out at the time of Batman.
Right.
Batman was very campy and colorful and like witty and stuff. But the Green Hornet was made to be serious. I mean, here's a guy who's in charge of a major newspaper in the city, and is one of the big law enforcement heroes, superheroes.
So, in the original series, did they have the Cameron Diaz character?
Yes, they had the secretary, who
Lenore Case.
Yeah,
that goes right back to the radio serial.
Right, exactly. They had her, and she was the true intelligent girl back then. You know, very beautiful, obviously, and she was always there at his side. The Cameron Diaz character, Lenore, she plays the intelligent girl, but in this case, you know, she's much smarter than the both of them.
Yes,
in this,
that's very true.
Whereas the other one, the original, the series, where she was just the...
She was just a girl.
Intelligent secretary, and of course, you know, Brett was smarter than her.
Right.
In the original series and serial, there was also a managing editor of the paper who was sort of a antagonist. He like Lenore, was not in on Brett's secret, and was always trying to actually catch the Hornet to collect the reward.
Yeah, they touch on
Edward James.
They
almost
touch on that. Yeah, very, very, very scantily on this one. So, again, if your kids are going to see your Seth Rogen, you'll like the wittiness and everything like that. Guys like us who grew up with it, I think, just have to gear their minds to a whole different, you know, different thing.
Yeah.
The action and the cars, oh my God.
Action was great.
Stunts, oh, amazing.
I think they went a little over the top at the climax, though. That was a little bit much.
Yeah.
Like, all right, that's a little too much.
And with what was going on, nothing, nobody, how could I put this without giving it away? Nobody arrived on the scene like, until...
Well, that's the classic, you know, the cops don't show up until after everything's done.
Yeah,
everything
I mean...
Everything happens, the bomb, everybody's defeated, now the cops show up.
Anything that was happening in the streets, I mean, in the real world, there would have been... But this, you know, it's a comic book movie,
it's so you got to give it some...
It's a movie, so...
You got to give it a little leeway.
But I'm thinking, I was sitting there watching it, said, my God, how many takes and how could they... How could they do that if they screw up something? Because they destroyed so much.
Yes, and that's funny because, you know, the whole thing was that they didn't want to hurt any innocents. And if you watch that movie, some innocent person must have got hurt watching, you know, involved in that whole movie.
Yeah.
Some random person had to have gotten hurt.
Well, they because the premise is, which is another thing that they kept, a premise is that he was an outlaw.
Right.
He wasn't your normal everyday superhero that was on the side of law and order. He was.
On the criminal side.
Yeah.
On the criminal side, but he wasn't a criminal.
Right.
Right. The idea was he was supposed to go after crimes that were so carefully planned out and done that the regular police and district attorney couldn't go after because there was insufficient evidence and so forth, and by pretending to be a criminal himself, he was able to get in closer. Yeah, that's right. There was, in the TV series, I'm not so sure about the radio serial or the two movie serials that they made out of it. There was also a DA that was in on it, Scanlon.
Yeah, no, this...
And he worked with Scanlon.
No, this no, nothing like that.
Not
there
movie,
is a
yeah.
DA, but not in the same capacity. Yes.
Right.
You know.
Let me see. The costumes were pretty good, I have to say. That they were a good update. It wasn't like padded. It was just something.
Right, it wasn't anything off the top.
Right, well, it was supposed to be basically the sort of clothes a gangster would wear, except in green, and the sort of clothes a chauffeur would wear.
Right.
But, you know, comparing it to all the superhero movies, everybody has to have some type of super, you know, crazy outfit nowadays. So it was actually kind of refreshing to see the costume design to be, I guess, normal.
Yeah, and you actually, in this one, Kato is the technical guy, he is the fighter, he is amazing in the movie as the technician. He just orchestrates this whole thing.
So in the
which in the series,
Kato
was just
a driver
and a hell of a fighter.
And if you want to go back to the radio serial or the movie serials, he was just basically a driver.
Yeah,
with his own gas gun in case the car was attacked.
And so he did have the gas gun,
because
that was in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, the gas gun was the Hornet's original weapon.
Yeah,
the sting didn't
Stinger
come. Didn't come in until the TV series. It wasn't
right.
on either the movie serials. There's two of them, by the way, or the radio version.
Right.
Okay,
the Stinger was in case you guys are too young. Me and Tom. Stinger was a telescoping cane, and it had a handle on it, and it would just hum at such high frequency.
Yeah, it was an ultrasound weapon.
Ultrasound weapon.
Really? That was supposed to be able to cut through anything.
Huh.
And,
that's interesting.
Right.
What about the car? Was that
Black Beauty?
The Black Beauty was always the Black Beauty.
Was that in
Black
was in
Beauty
the serial?
Had
yeah.
a lot of stuff
yeah,
going
that,
on.
That goes back to the radio. The thing about the Black Beauty was it was supposed to be faster than anything else on the road and totally armored. And one of the reasons, and in the radio serial at any rate, I don't think they'd put this in either the... They did put it into the movie serial. They didn't do it in the TV series. But its engine was so extraordinary that instead of making a roaring noise, it made a buzzing noise, which is one reason why the Hornet was the Hornet.
Yeah.
Why is it everybody who has a car in every show has to have the fastest car?
To outrun the cops.
No, but I mean, but everybody has one. Everybody can't have the fastest car. Knight Rider was the fastest car. General Lee was the fastest car. Mm. Batmobile was the fastest car. That's enough.
Which I think in actuality, the Batmobile
was like
40 miles an hour, something like that in reality.
Yeah, because it was very hard to steer.
They just speeded up the film when they came out of that.
But that's,
they speeded it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's an overused gimmick.
Well, let me tell you something. The thing I really appreciated, and I saw it at Comic-Con. We saw it up close and personal.
Yes, we actually saw the car.
I saw number 27 of the 29 Black Beauties that they had. What an amazing workable automobile
that was.
Yeah.
So that was actually kind of cool. Like, hey, we saw that at the thing, and they're like, there it is.
It was,
Yeah. Just one for the reason why it was supposed to be fascist is the original, in the original movie and radio serials, that was basically its only power. It wasn't equipped with rockets or guns. It was just supposed to be faster than anything else on the road and armored.
Was that after James Bond that they decided to put all that stuff on there?
For the TV series.
The big TV series thing was the hood used to open up, and this radar-like thing used to come out, and it used to shoot like an electrical current or something like that.
No.
That was the Batmobile.
No, what it was with the, in the TV series, well, first of all, they had missiles underneath the headlights, like I understand they do in
this. Right, the thing dropped down.
And later, they added a mortar. But the biggest thing was the trunk, a special hatch opened in a trunk, and a small helicopter-like, we today call it a drone, a television drone, could pop out, and the Hornet could steer it anywhere in the city and spy on criminals doing their thing, which incidentally, these days, they've just debuted that sort of thing.
Right.
And it was supposed to be one of his big things. Also, it was supposed to be equipped with quote, infra-green headlights. They were supposed to be like infrared so they didn't show.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you see, there's a great scene in this thing. There's a couple of things I really, really liked that had, you know, if other people see it, go, oh, you really liked it, why? You know, there was this scene from the air of traffic, and you see all the cars going, and you could definitely see the Black Beauty because it had the green headlights. And the way they paid their little homage to Bruce Lee.
Yes.
In the beginning of the movie.
They also paid homage to the original actor who was the Green Hornet. His picture was in the newspaper office next to the other guy that they pointed out. Edward James Olmos went to the wall, and there was pictures on the wall, and the actor was there also.
Yeah, wow. I just read something about that. Originally, they wanted the guy to do a cameo, but unfortunately, during the whole time of filming, it turned out he was having an operation.
Yeah.
And I gather also it took him a long time to track him down, too.
Right. Did you like when they had the theme song and they had the symbol, you know, when they had lights? They made that the greenest light thing when they were up against the wall. I remember a scene.
Yeah. But you know what I enjoyed? And I didn't think it was worth the 3D movie.
Right.
Except for the explosions and everything's coming at you. But, I mean, for that, and even at one point, I took the glasses off and I'm saying.
No difference.
But, where that comes in, and it's a great effect, stay for the closing credits.
Yeah.
Because they actually have great 3D effects in the closing credits.
And that was something that we mentioned on the show about endings. I think that ending, the ending credit scene, should have been at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a great, you know, it had all the names, it was very exciting, and it was 3D, so it was all over the place.
And things were coming at you, and this is what made the 3D worth it right there.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, the real opening that they had was just, you know, Green Hornet, and that was it. There was nothing spectacular, it just started like nothing. But if you had this ending as a beginning, it would have made the movie better, in my opinion.
I would have paid attention to the 3D.
Yeah. You know? So that's another, you know, it's a lot. It's funny how this movie, we're hitting a lot of things that we've been talking about recently.
It's like they've been listening to us.
The only thing that I say that I did not like was the logistics behind how the interaction between Cameron Diaz and Seth Rogen were. That made no sense, especially when, you know, we got to the sad part of the picture, as you're supposed to. It didn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? How the interaction is like,
just,
if this was normal, that would have never happened. It makes no sense.
This is the whole story problem I have. The whole story was like garbage. I mean, nothing meshed, nothing, you know, and even the when the characters came into play.
Right.
There was no real gelling or real reason
for the
reasoning for being there. You know, I you know, you don't want to give it away. You go watch it.
I did like the villain. I think he was the most charismatic person of the entire movie.
No pun intended, but he was very colorful.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be Russian mafia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the opening scene with the kid.
Yes.
Oh my God, that was priceless. But I mean, I just, was so disappointed the way the characters all got together.
Right.
You know, so.
I was under the impression when I saw the previews, like I said, I had no previous knowledge that he was actually taking over for the role of Green Hornet, that it already existed and Kato had worked with the father as the Green Hornet. That was based on either the trailers, that was the information I was receiving. Yeah. And so when I went in there, I was expecting that the father was supposed to be a Green Hornet in disguise, but he wasn't. I was like, oh, wait a minute, that was nothing like I expected at all. And then how they decided to become the Green Hornet and all that.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was ridiculous. That, in my opinion, that whole scene was ridiculous, the way they decided to become, you know. And anyway.
Did it have, I would say, any... For old fans, you said they really wouldn't enjoy it.
No, I said for old fans, it's a totally different movie. It's a totally different concept.
So would you have called the Green Hornet?
Yeah, definitely called it.
It would still be the Green Hornet in this case.
Without being called the Green Hornet, it would be kick-ass. Yeah.
But not as violent.
And a lot less curses.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me see. I think the resolution at the end was kind of funny.
Yeah.
How, he got out of the whole, how they decided to change the whole story to make it work. I thought that was funny. And yeah. It could have had more of that type of interaction. I think the ending of the movie was really
good. I think the ending of the movie could have been, it was like you thought it was the ending and then it wasn't the ending and then you thought it was the ending and then they, walk off into the, I wish they could have, did something creative, like got something on a policeman and just took off and left it open for a...
Well, I mean, it's obviously open for a sequel, but yeah. I would say it's a very low-key opening for a sequel. I mean, it's a very, nicely tied up, everything's resolved, but you can still, if it made enough money, it can go out.
And if there is a sequel, I would say I would go see it.
Right, so
I would go see it, but in the genre of what it is now, not what the Green Hornet was,
So you figure you pay about $16 for a 3D movie? Was it?
Well, IMAX, so 18.
Oh, you saw it. Oh, you saw it. You love the IMAX.
I love IMAX.
All right, so
that
$18, was it worth $18? Is it worth $18 to go see this movie? Should you just wait till a DVD?
For all the kids that are going out to see it and not really interested, whether it's comparing it to the old Green Hornet, it is. They're going to love the action. They're going to love their Seth Rogen. If they're fans, they're going to love him because he's, the quintessential Seth Rogen in this movie. He's not,
Yeah, he didn't do what Michael Keaton did for Batman. Because Michael Keaton, he completely owned the role. He really went into it. He did his job. Nobody after that was like, wow, Mr. Mom.
The sequels, to everybody today, Seth, there's going to be the Green Hornet. That's what it's going to be. My thing is, I wish I knew his name. The guy who played the original for the TV series.
Yeah, it was Van something or other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
And what were you wishing, that he would show up or that?
No. That's what I have in my mind that the Green Hornet should be.
Okay. And obviously the big thing about the TV show, as far as I understand,
Bruce Lee. Goes without saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived for watching that show for Bruce Lee. Because I wanted, he was amazing. It's the same way I live for watching Jet Li now.
Right.
I love less spelling of the name different.
Stanley.
I just think he's such a great martial artist, and it's like, it's like a dancer, like anything, one of the best dancers, you like to watch them because they're amazing. Well,
so did Jay Chou live up to the expectations of?
It's
something. It's a big shoes to fill. But was it even?
But the way they had him fighting and stuff like that. Now, of course, these days with slow motion and jumping around, so it. And the little thing, the little thing with how his mind worked.
Yes.
That was an extra plus, and people will find it amusing.
And they also threw in the joke that when Kato was upset that he wasn't on camera, Seth Rogen said, oh, because you're too fast for the camera, which was what they said about Bruce Lee way back when, that he was too fast for the camera, so he had to slow himself
down. Exactly.
So I think that was purposely put
another
in there,
homage
little
to Bruce Lee, which I appreciated that they did that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that was such a role. That's why I was so aggravated when they mixed Batman and the Green Hornet, and they had the fight scene.
It wasn't a fight scene. They never
Robert was actually holding his arm. Because I said to my friends, Bruce Lee is going to kick the living caca out of Robin. And then when the show actually aired, and you're watching it, so, oh, come on.
Well, you deliberately throttled.
Like,
back.
Robin actually got a couple of punches in there. Oh,
well, he's Robin. It's his show.
No. Robin
you
gets
can't
no.
Have Robin.
You can't have any punches getting in on Bruce Lee.
It doesn't
happen.
It's his show. You got to get something.
I'm sorry.
Just
no.
You were saying about having big shoes to fill. It's like
Van Williams. That's who played
Van Williams. Thank you so much.
Once again, thank you, Internet. Yeah. With the with Christopher Reeve, and it was such an iconic role of Superman. Dean Cain, when he did the TV series, was nothing compared to it. And then when they made the new one with Brandon Routh, he tried his best to emulate Christopher Reeve, and I think he did justice to the role. Even though no one can beat Christopher Reeve, I think he did justice. So that's why I was saying, if you think that Jake Chow could do justice to the role,
I mean, and the old and the new, all the us guys are thinking George Reeves. You know, when Christopher Reeves came out, but he did a great job. Reeves did a great job. And there was no gripes I had with that, thinking about George Reeves in the role. And,
right.
Yeah.
You know.
Truthfully, I never really heard anyone having major gripes against him in the role.
Yeah, it's just... I thought he was great.
So it was two different, two different generations, maybe?
Yeah, you know what
I mean,
it is?
It's hard to say.
A lot of the, thing is, it's sometimes bad to have those, and then see this, because we're not seeing what the kids are seeing.
Right.
We're not seeing that. They might all come out of it saying, oh, you're crazy. But so it's a hindrance of having the other Green Hornet under your belt if you go see this.
As a matter of fact, I remember I was having a discussion a couple weeks ago with some kids, and we were talking about Batman, and they didn't even know that Michael Keaton did Batman.
Yeah.
Because they're like, that didn't happen in Batman. We're like, oh, no, the other Batman.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's so weird that, the Val Kilmer, the George Clooney, even that's all just
gone
away. It's just all Christian Bale now.
Meanwhile, when I met him at ABC, Michael Keaton, we took a picture together. And now if I show people a picture, they go, oh, my God, you took a picture with Batman. And I'm saying, no, I took a picture with Johnny Dangerously.
Yes, Johnny Dangerously.
So, it's a whole different, it's different time and stuff.
Well, I can remember back in the 60s when people were talking, when you still had a lot of people running around who remembered the original radio serial of the Hornet and the two movies, and they were talking about how it compared to the radio and so forth. Not all of them liked it. Incidentally, a little trivia for you. Did you know that the Green Hornet originally, the original reason for it to be was a sequel to The Lone Ranger?
Yes, I had heard something about that.
That's the mask, I guess.
Well, what it is the Reeds, because if you remember the Lone Ranger's nephew's name was Reed. And the Reeds in the Hornet were supposed to be, Brett Reed was supposed to be, well, originally the Lone Ranger's nephew, great nephew, and I suppose at this point it'd be great, great, great nephew. But if you look at it, both series were very, very much alike. You had the masked hero who was often mistaken for a villain. You had the, pardon the term, ethnic sidekick with special abilities. And you had special weapons. In the case of the Lone Ranger, the gun with the silver bullets, and I think it had 7 shots instead of the usual 6. And in the case of the original Hornet, the gas gun, which, and remember, in those days, right after World War I, gas was considered cutting-edge weapons technology. And plus, both had the special means of transportation, the Black Beauty, in the Hornet's case, the great horse, Silver, which no other man could
The fastest
ride.
Horse. The, right. Once again,
and,
the fastest
horse, right.
Tonto's horse was Scout, right?
Scout, right. Yeah, get him up, Scout.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the original Tonto in the radio serial was voiced by an Irish American guy who was notorious for falling asleep in the studio and they'd have to kick him. It was time for him to do his lines, and sometimes he'd wake up not know where he was and just go, "Get him up, Scout."
Get him up, Scout.
So was the original Green Hornet as incompetent as Seth?
This guy was impeccably dressed, like the old the coat, the long coat, and he was smart and intelligent.
He was supposed to have become the Hornet because he was the editor of the I think it was the Bugle, they called it, but I could be wrong. Well,
this is the Daily Sentinel.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
The city government was supposed to be hopelessly corrupt. And, his father had exposed some of it and gotten killed for his troubles, which I gather is the same in this movie. But the point of it is the son Brett Reed had been bringing Brett up in the business.
Okay.
So to step in his shoes, and Brett decided there's more he could do than just print articles, and that's how he got into being the Hornet.
Right.
Though Kato always was his tech man. Incidentally, another little interesting thing about Kato, he started out being Japanese, and then after World War II started, he suddenly became Filipino without any, and then he went back to being Japanese again.
Well, you know, back then people didn't know either way. It was like,
well, they knew what Japanese was during the war, believe me.
So it's very weird to see him being a goofball if you think about it. Right?
Yeah. Oh, for me, yeah.
Must have been an insult.
For me,
this is terrible.
Yeah.
So with a minute left to go, final thought on the movie, yes, no, go see it, don't see it.
Kids are going to love it. The old timers like me and stuff like that, they're going to have to deal with it because it was geared, I think, to the young audience. Not even geared to the traditional Hornet thing, just to
I
think Seth Rogen wrote this as a totally different story.
If you're gonna see it, don't bother to see it in 3D. See it for like the cheap day, it for the matinee. I say if you're gonna see it, try to save as much money as possible. Otherwise, wait for a DVD. I wouldn't say it's a recommended movie from my part.
Right.
That about does it for this week. If you missed any part of the show, you can always catch us on our archives on www.itcamefromradio.com. Don't forget about the artist Tom Ziuko, and what was that address again? It was Atomica, Atomica 999@AOL.com to give moral or financial support, and we will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the host and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.